Welcome to the Wonder Women Tech Show, where we highlight, celebrate, and amplify women and BIPOC voices. We're bringing Wonder Women Tech to the airwaves. I'm your host, Lisa Mae Brunson. Innovators, it's Lisa Mae Brunson with the Wonder Women Tech Show. Today's guest is coming to us from the happiest place on earth. Kimberly Wilson is a passionate 20-year media and entertainment marketing strategist, currently serving as Vice President, Multi-Platform Marketing for Disney Platform Distribution. As Vice President, she leads a team of marketers tasked with increasing and sustaining content distribution for the Walt Disney Company's content portfolio, which includes highly sought after brands like ESPN, Marvel, Pixar, ABC, and FX. She is also passionate about serving her community in a variety of ways, and we'll chat more about that in today's show. But first, thank you so much for being here, Kim.
Thank you for having me, Lisa Mae. It's good to be here.
Yeah, I was reading about all the amazing things you do in the world, including being a VP exec at Disney. And I just have to say, I am in such awe of you. Do you ever sleep?
Listen, I get my sleep. I figured out it's so important. And so, yes, I do, but I am busy.
No, you are busy. I was learning about you. And I have to say, I was, you know, and this is a common thread among so many women that I get to not only interview on this podcast, but just cross paths with through the Wonder Woman Tech ecosystem, that most, if not all, of these amazing pioneering women are juggling a million things at the same time, and not inclusive of a family, just inherently with the work that they do and their outside interests. And then you add families on top of that, and it's amazing.
Absolutely. And what's interesting is you see that more pronounced, you know, during COVID, and just having to now pivot in how you manage your life and manage your work. So it has been very eye-opening and hard for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That whole balance of, and all of that. So family is very important to you, speaking about family. And so I would love to learn more about your roots, where you come from, what was it like growing up?
Absolutely. So I am from the south side of Chicago. I want to be super clear about what side of the city I'm from.
Like Michelle Obama, right?
Yes. Like 10 minutes, grew up 10 minutes, you know, from each other. I didn't, unfortunately, know her growing up, but, you know, we have mutual acquaintances. I grew up on the south side of Chicago. I had the oldest daughter of two girls. My parents were married 45 years before my dad passed away in 2014.
Wow.
But a really nice middle-class life. My dad owned his own business. My mother was the manager of that business. So had a really nice upbringing. My dad was a risk taker, so he pursued a lot of his interests. He kind of designed his life around that. So while he owned his own business, it was really just so he could travel, so he could, you know, read more. He followed his curiosity in ways that I think many of us wish we could, to be honest.
Yeah.
Neither one of my parents graduated from college, but that was extremely important to them for my sister and myself. So my sister Valerie is 2 years younger than me. She graduated from Hampton University and then went on to got 2 master's degrees. And then I was a late bloomer, so I had gone away to school, but then decided a year in that I didn't want to do it.
And I'm done.
You know what? I'm good. And you can imagine that did not go over well in my household. And so I left University of Illinois after a year and just decided to work with only a high school diploma. And I did that for 8 years before I knew what I wanted to do. Oh, absolutely. I'm a complete late bloomer here.
Wow, that is really interesting.
Yeah, you know, it is interesting because my sister, who, again, is 2 years younger than me, went straight through. She graduated from high school, went to college, worked for a while, went back to school. I was like, I'm going to do the opposite of that. Piss everybody off.
Because you're supposed to set the example as oldest, and you're like, nah, not for me.
100%. 100%. But it was important because it is my story. And it is, and I truly, had I not done those things and made those decisions, I would not even be in entertainment today.
Yeah, because, you know, you struggled to find what you wanted to do in life, but you had a life-changing moment when you saw the 1999 Malcolm D. Lee film, The Best Man, which motivated you to pursue your own career endeavors, you know, wake up, get yourself back in the saddle. So tell us what about that film impacted you in such a profound way? I've never seen the film, so I'd love to hear a little synopsis as well.
Lisa May, we're going to do that after this, okay? We're going to have a watch party because you need to watch The Best Man.
You know, we should. Let's kick off this podcast, you know, with the watch party so that we can actually come into this, you know, listen to this episode with a newfound appreciation.
Absolutely. We're going to live tweet all of it. The Best Man was the first film, or the first of a couple of films, but really the first film where I saw a cast of Black actors playing nuanced characters who were successful but flawed. There was a friendship, there was love, there was betrayal. There were all the things that you got to see in other films, but you really never saw that with us. And I think because of where I was in my life in terms of trying to figure out what it was that I wanted to do, to see these characters on the screen absolutely changed everything. Specifically, Nia Long's character, she was a BET producer. And so being able to see her do that made me believe I could do that. And so and I was only a semester back in school by this time. And when I tell you I hit the ground running, I doubled my classes. I reached out to BET for an internship. Like, I was, that was a pivotal moment for me.
Wow.
So that movie changed the game.
And it really, you know, just magnifies the importance of representation in media, because that is a case study right there, that seeing
Absolutely.
Ourselves represented in media can change the way that we, you know, shape our careers and, you know, structure how, you know, future generations move and are inspired in the world.
Yeah, and that saying that you can't be what you can't see is real. And coming up in Chicago, there wasn't a lot of industry, there wasn't a lot of entertainment industry here. And if it was, it was hidden. You know, you have to know someone. And I didn't know anyone. I was going to school initially to be an accountant. So by the time I went back to school, right, very different. But that my parents were like, that's an honorable career. You can make a ton of money. You know, you're at University of Illinois. That's a big deal. But it wasn't, as I say, my ministry. So I knew that I needed to figure out what I wanted to do that was going to marry what I was passionate about and excited about with learning something new. And this industry did that. So when I saw that film and I realized that, oh, so I could do that, because I just need to be a little bit more intentional about it, and it changed everything.
You know, that's so inspiring to hear, because, you know, to go for, 8 years of kind of floating and not really landing anywhere, and then seeing a film and you're like, okay, I'm going to double my classes and take this seriously. You know, you went from nope to heck yes. Like, let's get it done. And you know, it's funny because, you know, when we think about, so for me, I was kind of like that, where I'm like, I was like, school, ugh, do I have to keep going? I just want to get things done. And there are a lot of people, because, you know, education is forever evolving, especially now in this crazy world. And we don't think about all the different ways that we can, you know, become educated and inspired and go after our dreams. And yours is just another example of the complex roads that you've taken to get to where you are today.
Yeah, it's a really good point. There's more than one way to get there. And I think my story is a really good example of that. I think if I had gone through the kind of traditional route, I don't know that I would have taken those turns. I would have picked the school that I ultimately ended up graduating from, which is an art school. I don't know that I would have reached out to BET. And by the way, when I tell you timing is everything, when I reached out to BET for this internship, the woman who received my resume was not only from Chicago, but it graduated from the college I was attending. Mm. And so when she said, listen, the internship is yours if you can get to D.C. We don't pay, but if you can get here, you can have it. And it was like, wait, take a leave of absence from my good government job, because I was working for the state's attorney's office, the paralegal, because I thought that's what I wanted to do. And so then a series of events started to happen. I moved to Maryland, lived with my cousin, and worked in BT's headquarters as a 28-year-old intern. 3 months in, I come back to Chicago, go back to my job, finishing school my last semester, and they reached out to me about a full-time position in the Chicago office at BET. So with only that three-month experience, they hired me as a manager. And I just felt like that by the time I would have gotten to that place, from a traditional route, I would have been entry level. They would have hired me as an assistant or something like that. So timing is everything.
I mean, just the more I listen to your story, the more I mean, you should see me right now. My head's cocked to the side. I'm just like, wow, like 28-year-old intern, and then here's a management job. Here you go with, you know, the most influential Black entertainment company that there is, you know, BET. Right. So, wow, what was going through your head when you got the call, and then what was it like for you to step into that role?
You know, there was excitement. There was a feeling of, am I ready? There was, I don't know, but I asked for it. Emotions. Because I had spent so much time doing jobs I didn't enjoy and not having a college degree to be able to position me for better. So when it showed up, because I had put in the work, I'd gotten support from my family, all of these things had happened. When it showed up, I didn't know I was a little bit in shock. Listen, shoot your shot. You never know who will just say, you know what, I see something in you. I am going to give you the opportunity because you have potential. Because that's the only reason. That could have been the only reason they hired me. I had zero.
Oh my God. This is just, I'm loving this conversation.
And the lesson in that too is, if we did that more for people, especially the underrepresented, where we don't always have to prove that we've done the job to get the job, because that's not always how this works. We know that. imagine the talent that we miss out on when we don't look at it through with that lens. When we don't say, you know what, you may not have the 5 years that's listed in this job description, but these other skill sets are transferable. And oh, by the way, I see potential in you, and I'm going to help you and support you in getting to the place you want to go. We miss out on so much talent when we don't do that.
Cam, preach. It's not Sunday, it's Friday. You got a word. And when this airs, it will be Tuesday, and you have a word.
Who are you?
Oh, man. It is so true, because we do miss out on that. You know, I remember growing up, you know, I didn't have traditional background experience either. And I've always just been a go-getter. I mean, I still to this day don't know how I'm doing what I'm doing, because I had no experience when I launched. You know, I was actually trying to launch an internet TV company focused on representation in media. That's actually how I first started, and nobody was listening to me. I mean, I was ahead of my time, and I couldn't get anyone to fund me or listen. And but the seeds I planted, everything I did some social innovation work. I was launching these little campaigns. Everything from hugs campaigns to photo campaigns, and nobody, I felt like nobody saw me. But one thing led to the next, and then suddenly here I am launching hackathons for social good, creating a tech conference. Okay, like I had no idea how to put a tech conference on, like what? And and build partnerships, you know, with these Fortune 500 companies, like, oh, now we're building partnerships. I had no idea. But you know, it's so true that for every person that has believed in me, you know, like Mayor Garcia, who's the mayor of the city of Long Beach, you know, the Commission on the Status of Women in Los Angeles, who said, hey, we love what you're doing. Can you build that over here? It is so true. Like, the how far can you go if just one person or one organization or one opportunity is presented you to shine?
1,000%. And we see it all the time where, you know, we have to prove that we've already done it. Not that we can do it, that we've already
done it.
But be able to, you just never know what people are capable of doing if they're just given the opportunity. And I feel like in our instance, that happened, and look what comes from that. So there are, and then there are hundreds and thousands of case studies like this, that if you just invest and pour into people, you never know where they may go. You never know that next big idea, where that comes from, who comes up with that, what, you know, disruption they cause, what new innovation comes out of it. But if we're looking at people through a very traditional lens, and it's, oh, so you have X amount of years of experience. I can't tell you how many people, young people that I have hired who on paper didn't necessarily qualify, but because of my experience, I can extend that level of empathy and say, you know what, though? I think you'd be great. And I'm willing to invest the time to ensure that you'll be great, because a lot of times we want to hire for expediency and not hire for growth. So for me, I feel like when I was tapped, and I truly believe that's what it was about, we're going to hire for growth and not just hire because I need someone to get in the seat and do this job immediately. And that takes time, and that takes patience, that takes a little bit of effort.
Absolutely, because you do have to invest in them. You know, you see the potential, and then you have to invest in them so that they can grow and then ultimately, you know, blow you away.
That's right.
We need more leaders like you, Kimberly. I am just really inspired. And I get to, you know, one of the things that I feel is really one of my biggest blessings in this work that I do is that I get to meet leaders like you. I don't know if I just attract them or what, because everyone I meet, it is not even, I can't explain it. You know, like Barbara Y, you know, who's one of my favorite people on the planet. I'm just blown away by you wonderful women who are at the top, who can open doors and pathways for our future generations of people of color and women who can get in inside of these spaces and innovate, you know. We need more people like you. So how did you come to be part of the happiest place on earth and get into the Walt Disney Company?
The magic.
Yes. The magic.
So, along the way, just, you know, building relationships. So when I was at DT, I worked with this wonderful woman who is one of my best friends to this day. And it was, you know, I met her 20 years ago. She was working for Disney after her stint at DT. And by this time, I had moved to New Orleans to work in radio. And she said, hey, there's a role at Disney. At the time, it really was ESPN, but Disney owned ESPN. And she said, there's a manager role in the distribution group, which is the same group I worked in at BET. And she said, do you want to interview for it? Now, at the time, I was in New Orleans. I was a director. And I think it was time for me to leave radio. I loved New Orleans, but it was time for growth. And I interviewed for this role and got it. And what was interesting about that transition, because again, sometimes you have to make moves that aren't or perceived as kind of this like vertical, straight up. I was a director overseeing 11 people and 7 radio stations. I went to Disney as a manager, as an individual contributor. For me, long game was, it was the Walt Disney Company.
So, chess, let you know, this is the Queen's Gambit. You know, you're making your chess moves.
100%. So it was about, let's get in and then show what you can do and then navigate from there. So I left New Orleans in 2005, 2 months before Katrina hit, and moved to Los Angeles for this role. And I've been there for 15 years.
Okay, so like listening to your whole story and just like learning about, you know, I left just before Katrina hit. It seems like your life has been a series of these magical events that have like led you to where you are today. That is so profound.
She never thought about it that way, but I think you're absolutely right. Because, so it's funny you said that, because when I left, well, I won't say I left BET. BET asked me to leave because Viacom had just bought the BET the week I started. So it was a countdown before they would start to consolidate and downsize. So 2-3 years later, they had essentially closed our division in Chicago. So a bunch of us were laid off. But by that time, I had gone back to school to I had gone to grad school, so I was in grad school. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to get an internship. So now I'm 30, and I'm an intern at a smooth jazz radio station.
I love it.
So, that's what you do, right? You go work for free for somebody.
Oh, I love it.
So I'm on unemployment, and I'm interning for the smooth jazz station in Chicago, and from there was an amazing woman who oversaw all of marketing for, at the time it was Clear Channel Radio, and took me on as a mentee. And from that experience, my internship was over, she groomed me and I mean brought me on part-time. Like, I was a 30-year-old like putting up radio station banners at the Mary J. Blige concert. Like, that's what I was willing to do to stay in entertainment. And from that, she recommended me for the director job in New Orleans. And so I moved to New Orleans. And it was interesting because I didn't want to go. I didn't want to leave Chicago. And she very specifically said to me, her name is Angela Ingram, she said, you need to go where the opportunities are. I don't have a full-time position for you, so you need to be a, you know, take a little bit more risk, stop being so conservative, and move to New Orleans and go for this job. It's going to set you up. And she was absolutely right. Had I not gone to New Orleans, I would not have gotten this job at Disney. I'm pretty confident of that. I had to stop in New Orleans to gain that experience, and then was able to make the case as to why I was ready for more responsibility sooner than, say, traditionally, had I come in as a manager with less experience. So for me, it's all about the story, how you're telling your story, taking risks, not being afraid to your point, get out of your comfort zone, move to another city. You know, I had no friends. I didn't know anyone in New Orleans, but have lifetime friends now from New Orleans. And so it's all part of this one journey, this 20-year journey that started at the age of 28, and I only had an associate's degree. So,
you know, I'm literally getting tears in my eyes just because of how important this story is, Kimberly. In fact, it's so important that I think I want to lead the podcast launch with this episode, because it's so important for women like us, you know, people of color, people who have felt marginalized, people who have not had that traditional opportunity to get into, you know, education or get into management or opportunities, just in general, access to opportunity, right? Access. Somebody who says, I believe in you, so I'm going to take a chance on you at 28 and come on in and have it, you know, have this internship, have this opportunity at BET. Most of us would never have that opportunity or even go after it, right? But we need to know that any one of us can be you. You know, any one of us, this could be our story.
You absolutely nailed it, because I think people thought that, I don't know, if I had this traditional kind of path and just moved up. I mean, there were a lot of taking steps back, a lot of, you know, being on unemployment, a lot of almost losing my health. I mean, there's all those things that come with that. But for me, I knew what it felt like to work somewhere that you didn't feel valued and you felt like it was a dead end and you didn't have what you needed to be able to play out in the world with everybody else. I knew what that felt like. And while that work was noble work, it wasn't for me. I have lifelong friends that I worked with at the state's attorney's office. I worked with at the Cook County Public Defender's Office. But that wasn't my path. And to be exposed, the access is so important, to be exposed to images like The Best Man, to be inspired by the woman who's from Chicago and went to the school I graduated from, who said, I'm going to give you a shot. You know, there are these series of people being put in your path who are willing to lend a hand, who are willing to open their resources and their network to you is important. And the point about not being afraid to take chances is huge, because you can get complacent. There's a lot of feeling like, well, if I make this move, what if it's the wrong move? Mm-hmm. Or what if I make a mistake? Or what if I, you know, that imposter syndrome sets in? What if I'm not who I think I am? There's all of that. And pushing past that is more than a notion, but we have to do it. And our circle of people, surround yourself with people who will lift you up, who will challenge you, who will support you, and then you have to pay that forward. That's 100% part of the process, is how are you then paying that forward?
Oh, man. I could just sit here and be in your word, sis. So let's shadow you for a day, because you are, you know, a vice president of multi-platform marketing inside of the Walt Disney Company. What is that? Like, what do you do?
It's a good question. I try to explain it so that when my mother is talking to her friends, she has it correct. So, my my job essentially, I work in an organization that is responsible for the distribution of all of the Walt Disney Company's content. So all the television networks, ABC, ESPN, FX, Disney channels, all of that, National Geographic. And then all of our movie content to theaters, movie content to the digital platform, TV content to the digital platform, as well as direct to consumer. So Disney Plus, ESPN Plus, Hulu. So any content, we monetize all of the content for the Walt Disney Company. We further we get granular to what my specific team is responsible for. We're charged with managing the marketing relationships with those third-party platforms who carry our content. So on the TV side, it might be your cable provider. It might be, you know, your streamer. On the digital side, it might be Amazon Fire TV or Roku, all the devices that carry our apps. And then on the transactional side, it's, you know, Amazon Prime or iTunes when you go and buy a movie or you go and buy a television episode. So we manage and oversee the marketing relationship for all of those platforms.
You know, Kim, I'm sitting here like with an image of you at 30 putting up these posters.
Yeah, that was me.
I'm watching you as like a street promoter, you know. And then now you are in an exec office, I'm imagining, by the way, in a black leather, maybe a brown leather chair with your team, and you're directing the teams who are creating the posters, the artwork, who will, you know, who that young little girl, well, you weren't young little, but you know what I mean, who that person was like on the streets putting that poster up. I mean, how does that, is like, it comes full circle. It's so beautiful to see.
It does. Thank you for that reminder, because you can, it's easy to get caught up in the now and not really remember what it took to get to this place.
It's so true. And you know, it starts with the seed planted, and it starts with the legacy. And
right.
So with that, we're going to take a break for today's Pioneering Women in STEAM segment, and we'll be back shortly. And now it's time for today's Pioneering Women segment. Today's Pioneering Woman is Ava DuVernay. DuVernay is known to be the first Black woman to win the Director's Award at the 2012 Sundance Film Festival for her second feature film, Middle of Nowhere. The filmmaker also directed the Oscar-nominated film, Selma, which chronicles Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s leadership in the struggle for voting rights. She is also the first African-American female director to receive a Golden Globe nomination and have a film nominated for a Best Picture Oscar. DuVernay received numerous accolades as the writer and director of the four-part Netflix miniseries, When They See Us, and is working on many more compelling masterpieces highlighting Black stories and voices. Thank you for your pioneering contribution, Ava DuVernay. Hey, innovators, we are back with Kimberly Wilson talking about the happiest place on earth. And she's taking us to church, y'all, because she has a word. She has a word for us. Kimberly, you are passionate about serving your community, and you co-founded a nonprofit organization honoring your late father called Dream a Dream Foundation. Can you share more about that legacy?
Absolutely. One of the dearest things to my heart in terms of what I've done in my life. So, like I said earlier, my dad passed away in 2014. He was a huge influence on my sister, myself, and others. You know, he spent a lot of time traveling the world, curious about things like the cure for HIV/AIDS. He has a patent on a formula designed to treat the disease.
He oh, wow.
traveled to China to really like to understand and study diabetes and Eastern, you know, medicine cures for that. So he was very curious. He loved to read. He loved to explore. And part of that meant that we were also, as kids, tasked with being as curious, understanding entrepreneurship, having an instrument to play. Like, we had to play an instrument. We had to have a sport. So we created this nonprofit organization, my sister and my mom, in his name. And Dream a Dream is Dad, D-A-D. And so
aww.
It's in his honor. And we support kids 7 to 18 in the areas of sport, music, and entrepreneurship. And so when we started off, we were very focused on hosting programs. So we would host these musician clinics at the Boys and Girls Club in South LA. We would host a tennis clinic because tennis was a sport. So we would go out and teach kids how to play. And then we realized really fairly quickly that, you know, running a nonprofit is no joke, and you really need a full-on apparatus to do that. So what we decided to do was raise money and give it away. We knew we could do that. So we established a scholarship at his high school, John Marshall High School in Chicago, for seniors who were going to college. We paid to send children to jazz camp. Mm-hmm. So one of our biggest supporters is the Chicago Jazz Philharmonic Orchestra. And so they hold a jazz camp every summer, so we send children to that. Music was such a huge part of who he was. So that this organization, and it took us a while because, you know, it was about our dad, so it was really personal, but we quickly got to a place where we said, you know what, my father touched so many people's lives unintentionally that we should be intentional about giving back in his name.
You know, what I really love is that you started this with your mother and your sister and really created this to be a family legacy.
Yeah. My sister, the baby, who is identical to my dad. Like, it's like she shows up and she is him. It was important that we did it as a family. And then we added board members. So Eric Seitz is a board member. He is a musician. A writer. He plays drums for Patti LaBelle. He wrote Rock the Boat for Aaliyah. Like, he's been in the industry, but he is as passionate about giving back. Austin Taylor is another board member who I met when we worked at ESPN together. And then my mentor who sent me to New Orleans, Angela Ingram, she's on the board as well. So it's a mixture of people who are just passionate about giving back, but also means so much to my family.
You know, I'm so inspired by your work and your commitment to social impact and giving back. You serve on the board of St. Joseph Center, whose mission is to provide care, support, and resources for the Los Angeles homeless community. So at some point you went from, you know, Chicago to New Orleans to now you're in Los Angeles community. So first, where do you find the time to now also sit on a board? And second, what impact does this work make in your life?
You know, it's a really good question because I ran from that board for about a year. I was like, I am not going to be a valuable addition. I've got way too much going on. And then, you know, the amazing CEO, Valicia Adams-Kellum, who recruited me and also happens to be a sorority sister, I was inspired by the work that she and the board do in the organization, what they do for the homeless community in Los Angeles, that I stopped running. I was like, all right, enough. You find time to do whatever else you want to do. You could find time to do this. And so it's not just about, you know, having, they do more than just pass out food or feed. Like, they actually have a culinary program where they teach their clients how to cook, you know, to be chefs. They have a restaurant where their clients actually serve and prepare food. They provide resources like housing, temporary, and then helping them get to permanent housing. So it's almost a 360 approach to ensuring that our clients have the resources they need to ultimately be self-sufficient. And so that was really attractive to me. It's not a one and done, right? They truly see their clients as people who can ultimately get to a place where they can take care of themselves. And it's a beautiful thing to see. So I was like, I'm in. What do I need to do? And so that happened this year.
Wow. And during a year where we need like the most empathy and the most compassion for each other, you know, for humanity. I'm so passionate about social impact. You know, that's how I live my life. I do hugs campaigns every year, and this is the first time I have to think. I've hugged over 13,000 people, and this is the first time, since 2008. And this is the first time. I usually go to the Grove during the holidays and I pass out Christmas cards I hand write these messages.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I'm trying to figure out like, how do I do this virtual? Because nobody's going to give me a hug this year.
Is that COVID taught us just how important human touch is.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're void of that, how it impacts you mentally. So if people didn't understand how important a drive like that was at the time, I bet you they understand today. Because there was a time when I was in L.A., at home and quarantining alone, and just what that does to you mentally. I didn't actually understand that until it showed up physically for me. The stress of being away from your family, working from home, not knowing if you could go to the grocery store, all of those things. And then just human touch, not being able to hug my mother, hug my sister. That's some powerful stuff. So hopefully one day you get back to that, because that sounds amazing.
You know, I appreciate that because I live alone. I have my dog and I was, you know, I got sick early on in this pandemic and I was so sick that, I mean, I was like in the bed working. I don't even know how I survived. I look back at those months from March to May and I'm like, how did I survive? But something that I learned early on when I first started my Love, Hugs, and Inspiration campaign, people were telling me these stories. Some of these people hadn't been hugged. I mean, literally one person was like, at Arizona State University, I did a campaign and a student there literally said, I don't know how to hug. And I'm like, what? And I just grabbed her. Yeah, she literally said that to me. And these are, you know, these are the kinds of small and large impacts that we can make by giving back and being of service. And I also feel like it has made me a better leader because I tap into empathy. I tap into compassion and vulnerability.
And That's right.
In what ways has this served you as a leader?
You know, I was just having this conversation during AfroTech. I was on a panel when we were talking about the human side of innovation and what it means to evolve as a leader during this time. Like, emotional IQ has just raised with the roof for some people who were already empathetic, but I think it becomes heightened.
Yeah.
So I remember getting on a call with a team member and we get on a Zoom and I look at her face and I immediately see something's not right. She looks emotional, but you can tell like you could tell she has this look like I'm on with my VP. I need to keep it together, but I'm struggling.
Yeah.
And I immediately say, are you okay? And then when her bottom lip started to quiver, I was like, you know what? Why don't we reschedule and you take the day? It takes that level of, I don't know, engagement or just like heightened awareness that empathy to be able to immediately identify that something's not right and extend that person some grace, mm-hmm. and not push through a meeting that she wasn't prepared to have.
Yeah.
And so with this, if you're already empathetic, I feel like this called you to be, or just kind of amplified that in you. And hopefully it's taught people who didn't really exercise that muscle before, it taught people to be more empathetic for people in their family, people at work, you know, humanity at large.
Yeah.
So I do want to say this, though, Lisa Mae. I followed you on Twitter during when you were sick.
Oh, really? Like, oh, my gosh.
Man, she out here struggling. I'm sending hearts on Twitter like, what you mean? I'm just so glad you're okay, because that was scary. And I just remember thinking, this is a snapshot of what people are going through right now. And the fact that you were vulnerable enough to share that, I thought was amazing, because you didn't have to do that.
Aw, I really appreciate that. And that's validation, because, you know, one of the biggest takeaways I learned this year was that I've been doing life wrong. You know, I've been like, you know, hiding behind the curtains. I haven't let people see the real struggles and what I learned, because, you know, especially with, you know, we are bootstrapped. We like, you know, we work with these companies, but some of these companies give us pennies to what they would give us other platforms, right. You know? And so we've had, like you mentioned earlier, about proving yourself that you can already do it before you've even done it, right? That has been my story since day one. And 7 years later, still my story. And I reached a point where I'm like sick. I have nothing else to lose. I'm like, screw, we're at square one. I'm gonna, you know, my word is I have nothing else to lose, because I've already done my work. I know what I'm capable of. And so now I'm gonna speak my truth and be so authentic and vulnerable and ask for what I need. And those that I'm meant to work with and create with and journey on this, you know, journey with, will be here for me. And that's why I showed up like that. And that's why I said, screw the smoke and mirrors that I've been in. I'm just going to be authentic. And yeah, some people, you know, I had a couple of people slide into my DMs and say like, oh, you shouldn't really let people know that. And I'm like, I don't really care, because this is real life. We're not in intermission anymore. the curtain is up. You know what I'm saying? Oh my God.
Oh my goodness. That was a word.
That was a word. And in the spirit of vulnerability, Kim, tell us something that you've never shared with anyone else before.
Probably a reason, but and I have not shared this with anyone, because I think people have a perspective about you that is one thing, and they don't really know you, that I do absolutely suffer at times from imposter syndrome. Absolutely. I have moments where I question my abilities, which is not necessarily healthy, although it does motivated me in certain ways. And I don't know if it's the humility piece, but I've suffered from that. And I'm smart enough to know that there are people who I can talk to about that. And it's not about stroking ego, or it's helping you kind of talk through, well, why do you believe these things, or why do you feel that way? And I've never said that out loud. So that's one.
Wow. And that's something that all of us kind of identify with, because I know I struggle with that, but you know, I think it makes sense to me though, Kim, because you know, look, you came to be where you are through so many untraditional methods, right? And you've kind of like, it sounds like, you know, just listening to your journey, because I'm going to put on my, you know, psychologist hat here, that you really, you know, like landed in these spaces through opportune moments and have had to jump in and roll up your sleeves in real time. So you're like, you're working through everything that you're doing in real time, and you're in the R&D mode and trial and error, and you're doing it all in real time. So it makes sense that you would feel in some moments like, you know, what the hell am I doing? You know, what am I? I'm just winging it.
Seasons where you question, am I good enough? Am I as smart as people think I am? You know, but it's something we have to push through, because it is a sabotaging characteristic, right? You will derail your whole situation if you sit in that too long.
No, and it's so true. And I really appreciate you for being, you know, authentic and vulnerable enough to share that so that we can get an insight into, you know, how you do feel during times when you don't feel like you're measuring up to usually other people's expectations, but even those of yourself. Now, you've taken us all over the place, like, you know, a million and one paths. And, you know, if you could go back, would you take the easy road or the road less traveled, and why?
You know, it's an exceptional question, because, you know, there's always that, had I done, what would have, would I be further along in my career? And in this instance, I don't think I would have done anything differently. Everything, every move I made, every decision I made, even though at the time it felt like the world was over. Like, I just remember my dad being so upset with me for not registering for community college yet, and just angry with me because I was such a good high school student. I got into U of I and then just became like, I don't want to do that. So he couldn't quite understand it. But I think he ultimately got it. When I got that internship at BET and I'd gone back to college, it finally clicked for him that all those things prior led me to that place. Mm. And I don't know that I would have gotten there had I not been fighting with him about not registering for school yet, or, you know, becoming a legal secretary for the public defender's office, or going to get a paralegal degree that I'm not sure what I thought I was going to do with that. But I don't think any of those things would have mattered. And by the way, it helped. Those things also helped me get out of Columbia College sooner, because I had accumulated so many credits trying to figure out what I wanted to do. By the time I got to the school that I ultimately graduated from, I only had 2 years left. So for me, like, it just all played a part. It was all a piece to a puzzle that got me to where I am. And I've tried really hard not to miss the journey, because I know what it feels like to be lost and to not know what you want to do, not knowing who. Like, I didn't have mentors before this. I didn't have anyone that I could say, you know, should I get an internship? I thought of that watching The Best Man. And so I was able to tell my story to Malcolm D. Lee at All-Star Weekend last year.
Oh, wow.
Like, I saw him in a suite, and I was like, I want to tell him, but he may not believe me. So I convinced someone else to go get him, and he listened to my story. He was a little bit in shock, because I don't know that he understood how powerful The Best Man was for a few of us. And when I told him my story, he texted me along in front of me to tell her what I just told him, took a picture of us together, and sent it to her. And I was like, I'm done. I'm retired.
Oh, man.
So that was 19 years after his film. And I think what the lesson was, that I don't get awestruck often. I've been in the business a long time. But when you're inspired and you're able to tell the person who inspired you how they inspired you, it just brought it all full circle. So I don't think I would even have this story had I done anything differently.
You know, I'm like, there goes my tears, because Lisa May, I'm such an empath already, and yeah, as you mentioned before, this year just amplified that like tenfold. I'm crying all the time now, y'all. That is so beautiful and inspiring, and just like being able to sit here with you and hear your story and be part of your journey, and then to have it end with this full circle of, I told the person that influenced me on my path what impact he made on me. You know, that is anyone's dream, like to be able to celebrate with the people that bring you to where you are today. And I'm grateful. I hope that those of you listening to this podcast and listening to Kimberly's story can take something powerful away. And even if it's just that seed of hope that you can blossom, no matter how old you are, no matter what stage of life you're in, whether you feel like you're 80 or whether you feel like you're 10, like you can make your dreams come true. And Kimberly Wilson is a living example of that. You can find your happiest place on earth. Thank you so much, Kimberly.
Thank you, Lisa May. This was really incredible. And best of luck to you and everything that you're doing. And, you know, I'm watching and supporting. Just know that.
Oh, thank you. I support you too.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.